We are talking today with Jennifer Harbury. Jennifer Harbury is an attorney, author, and activist. She has spent the last 20 years working for human rights reforms both in Guatemala and in the United States. Her husband, Mayan resistance leader Efrain Bamaca Velasquez, was captured alive by the Guatemalan military on March 12, 1992. He was secretly detained and tortured and eventually executed without trial. Ms. Harbury's efforts to save his life, including three dangerous hunger strikes, resulted in startling official disclosures in 1995 about the CIA's use of known torturers as paid informants. Since that time, Ms. Harbury has pressed her case through a successful international trial at the International American Court on Human Rights of the OAS and continues to litigate claims against the CIA in the U.S. federal court system. She has written two books about her experiences, Searching for Everardo and Bridge of Courage. And she has continued to investigate and document CIA involvement in torture in Latin America as well as the Middle East. Her new book, Truth, Torture, and the American Way, analyzes the historic, legal, and policy questions raised by current U.S. torture practices. Jennifer, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
If we could begin, start out and tell us, what was the motivation in writing your current book, Truth, Torture, and the American Way?
Well, I actually began writing it right after September 11th, the attacks on the World Trade Center, and before the photographs of Abu Ghraib came out. Because of what our U.S. officials were saying, it was very clear what was happening. They were saying things like, the gloves are off now, we have to work with the dark side. If you don't violate someone's human rights, some of the time you're not doing your job correctly. If we can't kick the blank out of them here, we'll send them somewhere else where they do get the blank kick out of them. It was clear that we were torturing them. And in fact, I had documented more than 20 cases across Latin America where people had been severely tortured with a CIA agent in the torture cell saying things like, no, put the wire over here, it'll hurt more. Or, ha, 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 ask him that question, he's about to break, and so on and so forth. So it was clear it was happening again. And then when the photographs came out, it was quite astonishing for many of us out of Latin America because the techniques we saw in those photographs, which the officials and President Bush were saying the crazy ideas of a few kids, in fact, all of those techniques had been used on all of us, the survivors out of Latin America, or our dead loved ones. Not only had they all been used on us, but like I just said, they'd been used on us in the presence of North American CIA agents who were teaching how to do it, instructing, advising, sometimes participating. I then added, of course, all of the stuff that came out at Abu Ghraib, did a comparison of the techniques, did a rundown on what the Geneva Conventions actually say. They completely cover all detainees. It's absurd what's being said that somehow the Geneva Conventions didn't cover them. For example, the Fourth Geneva Convention on Civilians specifically says you cannot torture subversives or insurgents or saboteurs even if they carry out acts of deadly force against an occupying power. You can pick them up, you can detain them, you can give them a fair trial, and you can put them in prison so they don't hurt someone else, but you cannot torture them. Then, of course, I dealt also with some of the security claims that were being made, like does torture work or not? It most certainly does not. Any intelligent agent can tell you that, and so can common sense. But also, if you really, really look at what's happened so far and go through the ticking bomb thing that we keep being told about, what if there was a ticking nuclear weapon under Grand Central Station? If you really analyze that, it falls apart. What we're doing is creating a far, far graver danger or risk of a threat against all of us here in the United States than there ever was before because of the torture techniques that we're using. We're literally pouring gasoline onto a raging fire. The young people who are already paying for the torture techniques is our soldiers over in Iraq. The first few days, people were throwing flowers at them right after they first arrived and got rid of Saddam Hussein. Now they're up to 50 bombings against them per day. That's why people like Colin Powell and other military leaders and the JAGs from the beginning have been up in arms about throwing away the Geneva Conventions. The first to pay are our own troops. They're already paying.
So the motivation for this is coming from the top and going down through the Pentagon?
It's especially coming out of our CIA. The CIA is the agency that actually started looking into what the KGB in Russia, for example, the Soviet Union was doing way back in the early days, the 40s and 50s. The CIA was looking for the perfect way to make someone tell the truth, the perfect technique, the perfect truth serum or whatever. they looked at what the KGB was doing, and in fact, a lot of the roots of what we're doing now with some of those stress positions and sensory deprivation things came out of the KGB, even though, of course, we always talked about how dastardly the KGB was. But also the CIA in the 50s experimented literally with feeding LSD, for example, to unsuspecting victims, one of them to their own scientist, Dr. Olson, who then ended up either being pushed or jumping from the 10th floor of a hotel to his death. After that, they decided those things didn't work all that well. LSD and other drugs could make you talk a lot, but not more truthfully. Then they started getting into the sort of torture techniques that are sensory deprivation and combined and cumulatively sensory assaults that we're seeing. You take any one of those for 10 minutes, it may not break the person, but when you put them all together, they're devastating. You destroy the person. You destroy the person, but you don't get more truthful information, as our own experiences right now are telling us. But that's where it came from. It came from the CIA and then was brought in through other forces working with the CIA to places like Abu Ghraib, where we have a few young MPs taking their order from what they call other government agencies, almost always a CIA person. When their lawyers at the court-martials tried to find out who it was that had signed in that night, they found in the logbook Special Agent James Bond, Special Agent John Doe. They tried to get the information from the CIA in order to defend the young MPs who were saying they followed orders, and the CIA refused to give them anything. When the Army carried out its sweeping investigation and started planning reforms, the CIA refused to give them anything. They said, "We're doing our own investigation."
So do you feel like the CIA is the driving force behind this then, and not necessarily the administrations?
Certainly President Bush is 100% with the CIA. These things came from the CIA and were brought in, but President Bush, shortly after the attacks of September 11th, had signed a sweeping authorization permitting it. Many of the specific techniques are signed by authorization assigned by Mr. Rumsfeld. I mean, the administration has basically given a green light to the CIA to carry out illegal acts of torture, which de facto are war crimes. We're all going to end up in Nuremberg for this. Before, it was our executive branch and Congress trying to slow it down and stop it. It's always been illegal. Despite the law that was passed the other day, it's still illegal.
So you've been following this, obviously, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Are things getting worse currently?
Far worse, because there's a green light now to go right ahead and do it. And that's just horrifying to all of us that have worked for all these decades to try to bring it to an end. In 1992, as you know, my husband was a Mayan resistance leader. He was picked up by the Guatemalan intelligence forces. He became one of the disappeared. We were falsely told that he'd been killed in combat. We know that he survived severe torture for 2.5 years. During that time period, he was drugged repeatedly. He was battered every day on an hourly basis, from what some witnesses are telling me. He was injected with a toxic substance that caused his body to swell up so badly that one arm and leg hemorrhaged and he was raving. He tried so many times to escape, he was put in a full body cast so that he couldn't move, and then he was either thrown out of a helicopter or he was dismembered and scattered across a sugarcane field. In those 2.5 years of torturing him, according to the CIA files, he never gave them one true piece of information. And that's the true fallacy with torture. If you torture the wrong person that you just picked up because someone who wanted the bounty money turns their neighbor in because they don't like their neighbor or they want the money, then you have an innocent person who is in agonizing pain and will tell you anything that you want to hear. You'll then go pick up another incorrect person. Or you'll pick up someone who really knows some important information, and you can torture that person, they're very well trained, to say something else or to give false information for the first 24 hours while everything is moved. That's the great fallacy, again, behind the ticking bomb. Supposing there was a nuclear weapon about to go off under Grand Central Station, and the CIA grabs a suspect. Well, number one, it could be the wrong person. He won't know anything at all. You torture him, and of course he's going to say something. He'll say, "All right, it's the guy down the street." You'll go running to that part of the city. The bomb will go off because it's actually somewhere else. You just got sent on a wild goose chase because you were torturing the person and he wanted you to stop hurting him. Scenario number two, you get someone very high up in the plot and you torture that person. Well, all of the insurgencies around the world, including my husband's network, they all use the same covert ops book that the CIA uses. This is real basic stuff. The person will not know where the bomb is unless he placed it. It's the need-to-know basis, compartmentalization. You'll torture that person, he'll scream his head off, and he'll say something. You'll go to the wrong building, the bomb will still go off. Last possibility, you get the correct person. He did place the bomb. He's that high up. You'll torture that person, and like any good person or leader who's well-trained, and he'd have to be awfully well-trained to have that information, he'll say something else just long enough that the bomb can be moved. Even if you could get him to talk, you know, by torturing him, and even on that wild-off chance that he'll somehow break anyway and give you the truth, by then all of his protective network knows that he's been picked up. They'll have moved the bomb. Even if that person says where it was, it's somewhere else, and it will still go off. What we have to do is carry out very strong preventative measures, such as the next time Condoleezza Rice has a personal meeting with some people from the CIA who are worried about an Al-Qaeda attack, take it seriously. President Bush gets a memo while he's on the ranch saying Al-Qaeda planning to attack within the United States imminently. Come home from the ranch. Philippines warn us again and again about plans to fly airplanes into tall buildings. Might want to look into that. The FBI people like Colleen Raleigh frantically try to send up messages that a Qaeda suspect in the United States wants to learn to fly a plane but not take off and land, and that's blocked. We need to look at why we were not gathering good intelligence. Torture's the worst thing we can do. It didn't work in Algeria. It didn't work in Vietnam. It hasn't worked in Northern Ireland. It didn't work in South Africa. It's not working right now in Israel-Palestine. You can use those techniques. You can get people to temporarily take a step back. But then you plant those seeds of rage, hatred, and trauma, and you get engulfed in the ensuing bonfire. And again, the people who are engulfed right now getting burned are our troops. We're next. We're making it far more probable that there will be another attack because of what we've done. We're endangering ourselves. We're also grossly shaming ourselves. This has been war crime since Nuremberg. We know better. What have we done?
So if the people at the CIA, obviously they would have even more details and information on this than what you have dug up, then why are they doing this? Do you have a sense for if they're not getting actionable intelligence, why continue with it?
Well, this is an ongoing battle, for example, with the FBI, which for years, because they can be sued, their actions within the United States are subject to the Constitution. So they've been sued for police brutality for a very long time, and they've developed very good techniques that do work. They don't work fast. There is no magic bullet, quote-unquote. But what they said, for example, is when they captured Al-Libi, a high-level suspect in Pakistan at the beginning of the war, they said that they used the very well-practiced techniques that they always had. You know, there were things like good cop, bad cop, you know, very careful interrogations and catching him on contradictions, incentives and disincentives. But what the FBI says, and which the Mossad agrees with, the toughest intelligence people on the planet, is the only thing that really works is to very slowly build a rapport. Not a friendship. That's different from a rapport. But apparently most persons, if long time enough imprisoned, will slowly build a relationship with you, and they will talk eventually. What some very clever Mossad people have said, for example, is don't go in at all now as Westerners. Your time is up now that all of this has happened and flashed across the TV screens. What you need to do is send in an imam, a Muslim religious leader, to work with this person just the way we would with a cult person in this country, someone who might have been involved in the bombing in Oklahoma, for example. Deprogram that person, make them see that their religion does not call for that kind of actions, in fact, the contrary. But don't send in some Westerner that they now associate with sexual humiliation and torture. They'll never forgive us, and in fact, that's probably too late. Those things work. So with Al-Libi, the FBI was using those very carefully programmed and developed techniques they've been using for decades now. And it was working. They were getting good information. The CIA then came in and said, it's our prisoner now, and there was a turf fight. The CIA won. They strapped the man down. They put goggles on him. They insulted his wife. They sent him to Egypt, where they also accompanied him, and he was badly tortured. And he said, you're right, there's weapons of mass destruction over there in Iraq. On that basis, we went into Iraq. Good shot. There's the case of Mr. Aboud, who was an Iraqi prisoner who was tortured very badly, first by Saddam Hussein. Got out, was glad that Saddam Hussein was gone, but didn't like what the Americans were doing. He thought he saw a bomb in the back of a car, and he told the local Iraqi police about it. They turned him over to the Americans, who put him back in Abu Ghraib, where he'd already been. He was tortured again, just like he was by Saddam Hussein. During that torture session, he really knew the drill already, and he said, you know, you're right, I'm Osama bin Laden in disguise. I'll sign. What do you want me to sign? When he got out, the Washington Post reporter said to him, so now are you planning to run off and join the insurgency? And he said, what would you do if someone came to your country, occupied you, smashed all these doors down, did sexual humiliation, torture, et cetera, and broke all of your laws? Wouldn't you resist? And he walked off. Then there's the case of my husband, 2.5 years, all wild goose chases. People, you can torture them, you can make them talk, you can't make them tell you the truth, you can make them hate you, you can make all of their families hate you and want to be the next people to come back with a bomb against you. Foolishness.
What do you think of the idea that some people who have been looking at the U.S. policy on torture, saying that the real target isn't so much getting information out of individual people, it's a tool to terrorize a given population so that they
That's exactly right. And the French tried that in Algeria, and for a little while it works. In Guatemala, for a little while it works. You can make everybody so terrified they'll lie face down in the mud for a while, but then they all join forces, and they come back, and they throw you out. Vietnam, how quickly we forget. And I find it really excruciating to hear so many administration people shuffle around right now and say, well, it's not really torture. I mean, let's look at waterboarding just by way of example. If you hear the CIA describe that, it's like a pool dunking. We hold the guy's head underwater till he, quote, thinks he's going to drown, unquote. That doesn't sound so bad. Or we pour a little water in his face and it's uncomfortable. Here's what my friend, Atoniel, who was waterboarded several times in Guatemala, describes that at. One time, there was a CIA person that came in and out and interrogated him about Cuba. He said, they held my head down in a vat of water, and I tried not to inhale the water, but after a while, I had to breathe, and it all rushed into my head and gave me that burning pain all through my head. Then it got worse. Then I thought my eardrums were going to burst. Then I started gagging and choking in the water. And I started vomiting in the water, and then I went into convulsions. The next thing I know, they were giving me CPR. When they woke me up, they drowned me again. That's a standard description of waterboarding. We did it to Sheikh Khaled Mohammed over in Pakistan, captured very early on. They didn't say they were pouring water. They say they strapped him down to a board and immersed him in a tub of water. That's what waterboarding is. It's not a little prank or scare technique. I testified about this and presented Antoniel's affidavit to the UN this spring, to the Committee Against Torture. And they banned it in their report. Obviously torture. Obviously torture. Like, who do we think we're kidding when we say that it's not quite torture? Saying the little magic words doesn't change anything of the reality. Stress and duress. Rumsfeld at the bottom of a page said, why shouldn't they stand for this length of time? I stand all day. Why not them? And it's like, yes, but Mr. Rumsfeld does get to walk around, which allows the body to push the lymph and the fluids from his legs and keep them from building up. If you make a person stand immobilized for a long period of time, the lymph doesn't go anywhere and you swell enormously and suffer excruciating pain. My friend Herbert Anaya, head of the church-sponsored Human Rights Commission in El Salvador, was picked up, dragged out of a store in front of his wife and kids and a number of witnesses back in the 80s. His wife, through amazing connections with the military, was able to find out he was being held at a local police station with U.S. military advisors taking the information as well. She didn't like that. She sent her lawyer, who banged on the door and demanded to see him, unheard of in a case of the disappeared, of course. Someone answered the door and said, well, you'll have to wait a minute. I have to ask the Americans. And the American came downstairs and said, you'll have to wait a minute. We'll bring him. He was then allowed finally to go in and found Herbert sitting, looking deathly pale, on a chair with a huge blanket covering his legs and feet. When Herbert was finally released, since they knew where he was, they found out why that blanket was there. He'd been made to stand so long that when they came down to get him, they couldn't cram the shoes back onto his feet. They needed to cover his entire, all of his legs and all of his feet because they couldn't get him back dressed. It didn't save his life. He lived for a few months and then was putting his toddlers into the car to take them to daycare in front of his home when he was shot down dead. These techniques are devastating. A woman in Honduras who had her hands and feet tied behind her back and then suspended from the ceiling, called the helicopter position, use now. She was left that way with dogs yapping at her and no bathroom privileges, et cetera, and said it was the worst thing that ever happened to her. I said, how stressful was that position to you? And she said, oh, very stressful. It dislocated my shoulders. Diana Ortiz, the nun, the American citizen nun that was horribly tortured in Guatemala, had those dog attacks used on her, and she's never gotten over it. If a dog barks in the night, she or anyone else who has suffered that technique, they're going to jump through the window. there's the water pit we're using in Afghanistan. It's in my husband's files. You put the prisoner in a pit of water so deep they have to hold on to overhead bars to keep from drowning, and you leave them there for a very long time. Several hundred people, maybe 1,000 prisoners in Afghanistan, died in what's called the death convoy when they were sent from one prison to another not long after that prison uprising that resulted in the death of Mike Spann, the CIA agent. They were put in hot metal shipping containers on the back of pickup trucks, no water and no air holes. So they slowly suffocated on that trip, or burned, basically, cooked in those containers and flopped out dead, as one driver said, like a bunch of fish, dead on the ground when they arrived. The CIA at the time, when questioned about what was clearly a war crime, they were all buried in a mass grave out in the desert, said, "We didn't know anything about that. Those hot metal shipping containers, that's an old Afghan warlord torture technique. Nothing to do with us." But the next week, they put John Walker Lind, the CIA did, in a hot metal shipping container to send him from one place to another. Then we find out hot metal shipping containers are also used as punishment in Iraq by the U.S. troops, and especially by the CIA near Bagram Air Force Base. You put the prisoner in there and let them start to cook. Is this a new thing since September 11th? No. Colonel Ann Wright, who's been with the Army for more than 30 years and who has resigned over all of this, said she saw something very similar in Grenada when the U.S. forces went in, and she could not believe her eyes, also being an attorney. And she went up and made them stop that immediately. What were they thinking? What were we thinking, and what are we thinking?
A lot of people would have the impression that since Abu Ghraib that things have begun to get better. What's the truth to that?
That's ridiculous. It's become totally widespread. We just made it legal. And we basically have just given a pardon to anyone that carries those actions out. All we've done is kept it more secret. We've gone back to behind closed doors. But it was just legalized. It was just pardoned. We've lost our place in the international community.
So can you give us a sense for the scope of how many people are being affected by this, how many countries it's being used in?
We're not allowed to know how many prisoners are secret prisoners, where they're being held, or what their names are. We've disappeared them. That also, by the way, is considered torture by the Convention Against Torture. It's 100% illegal. But we're doing it. We are the disappearers now. We are the death squads. We are the Nazis. And I say that as someone who's half Holocaust. We've become that. And I used to hear every night at the dinner table, "I hope you never grow up to be like those Germans who just look the other way while people would be dragged away to their terrible deaths." It's like, well, are we?
So what would you like to see done currently in solving this?
Well, I'd certainly like to invite everybody to call our congressperson and tell them that if they don't take immediate steps to annul this law or to repeal it, that they will not receive your vote. But we have to make Congress understand that at the next election, it's coming up soon, that it's not that we won't vote for them if they're soft on terror. It's that we will not vote for them if they're soft on torture. And we're talking about taking action on it, not just letting it fly by and blaming someone else. There's no space for neutrality just now.
Do you foresee having to do direct actions here to deal with this?
What do you mean by direct action?
For instance, you did hunger strikes in the past.
It could be. It could be. For myself, I'm still in court against the CIA on my husband's case. I told you earlier what had happened to him, and those people that carried out that torture, I always assume everyone remembers this, but the people who carried out his torture were also paid CIA informants. They were also working for the CIA. In the 2.5 years that he was tortured, the CIA knew where he was and what was happening to him 6 days after he was picked up, and they notified the embassy. Then the CIA and the embassy told me and the U.S. Congress for 2.5 years that they had no information about him. In fact, they received a bulletin while I was searching for him that he was still alive, and so were 350 other prisoners being tortured and soon to be killed. From that point till the very end, when I got the news from Senator Torricelli about what had really happened, bulletins continued to fly in saying, well, this person's been thrown down a well in San Marcos, those prisoners have been thrown out of helicopters, these people have been shot and tossed down ravines, Bamaka's been held in a full body cast because he keeps trying to escape. One by one, those bulletins show that they're dying, dying, dying. Then the very last one says, Bamaka is dead, We haven't seen the others for a long time. I guess they're all dead, too. Then come the disclosures that he was alive, the others were alive, they could have been saved, but it's too late. That was all done with our tax dollars. After that, Senator Specter and the Senate Intelligence Committee held a huge hearing on how it was possible that they had been lied to, which is, of course, a crime, but no charges were ever brought. And after I testified, he and the other senators said, "This is a disgrace. This is un-American. How can we allow this to happen? It was just a few bad apples down in the CIA branch office. We fired them. It will never happen again." So here we are. I plan to go to Spain after this case is thrown out of the courts, which now is, of course, a positive, an absolute ending in the courts of law here. As soon as it's over, I'll do either Spain or Germany, Pinochet style. But that's not enough. We all have to do something right here.
And the people that were responsible for those actions back then and in Central America, I understand some of those are in the current Bush administration.
Well, of course, we're looking at Negro Ponte, who covered for all the horrifying things that Battalion 316 was doing in Honduras while he was ambassador. There's Mr. Elliot Abrams back in power, Cheney and Rumsfeld, their longtime actors. Mr. Bush, the first president, was once head of the CIA. Kissinger is walking free and advising again. It's like it's all of those people that we almost, but not quite, got put in jail before. They're back and they're in power because we're allowing them to be.
In addition to your book, do you have any other resources you recommend people turn to?
There's many, many different ones. My book really has a summary of all these different aspects. If you'd like to read more about the long-time history of how those CIA techniques were developed, there's Alfred McCoy's book on torture techniques. Certainly there are many right now on 9/11. I highly recommend the 9/11 Commission report. There's also a book by Professor Pope, I believe, who wrote a lengthy treatise. In fact, what he did is he analyzed all of the data about suicide bombers around the world to find out, is what's the common denominator? Is it religion? Is it poverty? Is it lack of education? And certainly what our authorities right now would have us believe. And in fact, it's none of those. The common denominator is if the people feel that they're being occupied, humiliated, and, of course, traumatized. And as a half-Holocaust person, I went over to Israel and organized a brief study on the number of suicide bombers between the first and second Intifada. From the first to the second, with that immediate, you know, infliction or imposition of extreme security measures, the number of suicide bombers had tripled. Not gone down, tripled. Where? Gaza, Jenin, Ramallah, Bethlehem, all of the places where the most harsh security measures were in place. In short, it was totally backfiring, which a number of the Israeli military leaders are now admitting. It is backfiring. Then we tried to find out, well, what about those families? Was there trauma involved? And we did 40 interviews. The Gaza person that was trying to work with us couldn't get out of his house because of a lockdown. But we did 40 from the Jenin and Ramallah area and Nablus area. 39 showed extraordinary trauma. So, yes, we're throwing gasoline on the fire, and if we're too foolish or too weak to do something about it, then we can just wait for the next attack. I'd like to note, I guess, in ending, that September 11th is also National Commemoration Day in Chile, which it was September 11th that the CIA went in with General Pinochet, bombed the Moneda, the equivalent of the Capitol building, murdered the president, who was legally and popularly elected, and rounded up thousands of Chilean citizens, tortured them, and machine-gunned them in the stadium without trial. We have to be careful of what we put out.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks.
We've just been talking with Jennifer Harbury. She is author of the book Truth, Torture, and the American Way.